Hello, this is Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. We are back. This is Smith Sabatino, heard on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. We have with us as our guest in this segment Dr. Jack Rafius, former White House Energy Policy Advisor, the principal of the Rafius Organization, advises government agencies, policy institutes, corporations, associations on energy, international trade, sanctions, national security, and their interrelationships. He's a graduate of Stonehill College, an MA and a PhD from Notre Dame University. Mr. Rafius, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Carl.
We're here with Roland Smith.
Roland?
Hello, Jack. How are you? Nice meeting you verbally.
And you. Thank you.
As an energy policy advisor, and I'd like to get your thoughts on how we're doing today, give us the I used this on a guest earlier, but I like hearing it because it makes sense for our regular listeners. The 10,000-foot look at what's happening with energy in America today.
Well, I think most of the things that are happening today to Energy America have to do really with negative moves by the government, and it's been going on for 5 or 6 years or maybe more, and I don't think there's any doubt that it will continue for the next 2 or 3. The closure of more lands up in Alaska, the taking off the list of the Beaufort Sea so that that cannot be developed or there'll be no lease sales up there. Each day seems to bring something fairly new and going all in the same direction. So when the president years ago said his energy policy was all of the above, it's not quite what people thought he meant.
Well, what do you think he did mean, Mr. Rafius?
Well, I think it's become very, very clear that what he means is get rid of fossil fuels as quickly as possible and go completely to green fuels. And I think that it continues to be a misunderstanding of how fast something can be done. Even today, the so-called green fuels account for maybe 7 or maybe 8% of all of the energy that the United States uses. So if you decided, okay, I'm going to do by executive action, which seems to be the mode now, say that tomorrow we can no longer use any fossil fuels, then how are you going to get 92% or 93% of all the energy that we use from something that is barely developed? And it is developing. If these things will work out, but it'll be decades more.
The fact that that it's obvious in your statement that that fossil fuels is a is something that you support and
sure.
agree with.
Right.
And you're going to have some arguments, not certainly from Carl or me at the moment, but you are going to have it from the environmentalists of this country who say that by taking the wilderness areas in Alaska off the books is going to be positive. I know that the governor of Alaska doesn't like the idea, but I did read that they were also opening up perhaps some of the Atlantic Ocean oil fields.
That's true. They're opening for lease some areas off the basically the southeast coast of the United States. It'll go from roughly southern Virginia on down through Georgia. So that is a considerable thing. There will be conditions on that. None of the drilling can be done within 50 miles of the coastline, but that is a welcome change. And it'll be deep water, obviously, and it'll be 7 to 10 years out in the leasing program, so this isn't going to be something that opens up next year by any chance.
For the unsophisticated and those who remember what went on in the Gulf of Mexico when the oil well there kind of
the BP
BP oil well contaminated a lot of the Gulf Coast. Have things changed enough in your opinion, that that makes deep sea drilling a little safer?
Well, when Clinton was president, you could not, it was just impossible. The technology wasn't known or hadn't been developed to do any deep water drilling. And so Clinton put into effect a law and a set of regulations that basically it provided tax incentives so that the companies went out and developed entirely new ways to go about these things. And so now in some places you have wells drilled in 20,000 feet of water, four miles about of water, and then going another 7,000 feet. And of the various wells that have been drilled, not, obviously not all in those depths, and neither was the BP well, there's been that one accident. And one is too many. There's no two ways about it. But that had to do, according to all of the trials and all the testimony and everything else, with bad decision-making and with a company or maybe two companies ignoring what the regulations were and what their own safety protocols called for. And so that's why BP got nailed so strongly by the courts. It wasn't that, oh, gosh, this is an accident. Yeah, it was an accident, but it was really kind of furthered, I'm afraid to say, by bad decision-making.
In your opinion, the Keystone Pipeline, which is an issue that has had the United States gripped in debate now for quite some time.
Right.
There's confusion to many, I know, in our audience as to specifically what is the benefit to the United States of the Keystone Pipeline?
Well, the benefit, I guess one of the first benefits is that it helps the United States deal with one of its greatest trading partners, Canada. And before we knew about shale and before we were developing shale to the extent that we are, Canada had begun to develop its tar sands. And so this made it really a good thing to move those tar sands after they're processed up in Canada, to move them down to our Gulf Coast refineries, which are basically made to handle that kind of crude oil. The southern third, approximately, is completed, and you may recall about a year or maybe a year and a half ago, the president announced that very gladly, almost as if he was personally responsible for completing that part of it. The one part that's been the holdup and has become a political football, if you will, here during Super Bowl week, is the fact that the State Department and the president have to make the final decision because the pipeline crosses the U.S.-Canada border. And so it became political only because of that one condition. So it would help the United States. It would help Canada. It would help the two countries that are great allies. And it will provide more and more oil and oil for all the uses that we make of it.
You're referring to the Athabasca tar sands?
Yes.
Yeah. And I read, I don't know, a number of years ago that, I mean, there's if you can extract the oil from around the grains of sand, you've got more than enough than Saudi Arabia ever had in its history.
Yeah, that's true. And about probably 10 years ago now, Canada decided that they could do it because they had been for a while in small quantities. And so all of a sudden, in one declaration, their domestic reserves went from something like 4 billion barrels to 180 billion barrels. And they have been developing that resource. And it's gigantic. It's absolutely right what you've said. They've been developing that gigantic resource over the past 10 or 12 years.
Well, we'd love to have you back to this, to continue this discussion, because there's so much here. This is the energy that drives America, if not the world. And
right.
we've got to come to some meeting of the minds as to how we're best going to manage our future independent of the Saudis and the rest. We've had enough of that. I'm almost sure you would agree with that.
Right.
But I want to thank you very, very much for joining us, Dr. Jack Rifus. Thank you so much, and do promise to come back on Smith Sabatino shortly.
Well, I appreciate that, and I look forward to the opportunity. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
We both do. Have a great day.
Well, this is Carl Sabatino as we move along here, Roland. That was very interesting, by the way, and there's so much more.
I would like to get him back.
I would. There's a lot there.
We needed a couple of, or two or three segments on
yes,
that.
Yes, and I have a feeling we're going to do that because we have an opportunity to get at the heart of the matter, which we haven't done in a while, okay?
Yep.
And we were getting there, but we ran out of time. And then those hands in the air, Carl Sabatino.
And you've been getting to the heart of the matter on a lot of things.
And Roland Smith, we're back. Stay with us.
America Weekend.
Think Green. Harris with you. GreenBusiness.com is reporting that while Republican senators delay proposed climate change legislation on the grounds that it could harm the country's economy, a major study from UC Berkeley, Yale, and the University of Illinois suggests that a robust climate bill would actually have the exact opposite effect, in fact, and would boost GDP by $111 billion by 2020. The study also indicates the action to roll out emissions cap and trade and accelerate clean technologies could create between 918,000 and 2 million jobs. Meanwhile, the average household income could grow from $488 to $2,000 a year as a result of this bill. This flies in the face of industry-backed groups that claim a climate bill will impose huge costs on businesses. And now we learn such a climate bill, as we've seen in Europe, will actually hearken a boom from the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.
Now, Cheap Psych Tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Ever heard of football crowd disorder? Well, that's what the academics call it, and you've probably heard of it as a hooliganism. It's the fight that breaks out after a big soccer or football match, but they're controllable. Here's the social science of it. These melees are known for their violence, and many countries try to combat them by displaying police in full riot gear. But social scientists have found that this dress may create the expectation of a fight and guarantee the intensity of a violent outburst.
I gotta fight for my right to party.
At a recent world event, police were still present, but their laissez-faire, leave-it-alone style was soothing instead of aggravating. What's the cheap psychological trick? It seems that if people expect to fight, they won't disappoint. It's smarter to walk softly and only show the stick if you got to. Got a question or a comment? Love to hear it at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.